British Sky Broadcasting, in association with Paramount Pictures, presents The Manchurian Candidate, starring Denzel Washington as Ben Marco, Meryl Streep as Eleanor Shaw, and Liev Schreiber as Raymond Shaw. Also starring John Voight, Kimberly Elise, and Jeffrey Wright. The music is by Rachel Portman. Audio described by Tony Cook on behalf of the MCS agency. American soldiers crowd round a table playing cards in an armored personnel vehicle. Some are black, some are white, all are young. Dollar bills change hands. Banknotes are being slapped onto the table. If it gets you in the home, I'm sure you're inside. Survivor! Some talking. Plumes of black smoke from burning oil fields rise high above the desert. The place is Kuwait, and the year is 1991. An armored jeep is parked next to the personnel vehicle. Inside, a black American captain pours over a map with his guide.
So why don't we just go directly in, right up this route?
Straight in.
Yes, well, I see the captain enjoys the road less traveled.
No, the captain enjoys not going down the highway, dragging his ass so every Tom, Dick, and Gaddafi can take a whack at it.
It's very bad here. It's bad here. It's still bad here. And I've heard it's bad right down here.
Bad everywhere.
Yeah.
Mines?
Tricky. Swedish, mate.
The man didn't say anything about mines to me.
Sergeant Shaw!
The sergeant sits in the open, staring blankly into the distance.
Todd!
Sir!
Rolling in 2 minutes.
Yes, sir.
You okay?
Yes, sir.
The sergeant gets to his feet.
2 minutes.
Yo, give me 2 cars, man! My brother's out of it, but I'm still in it. On top of that, I'm in it to win it.
As Sergeant Shaw stands at the open door of the armored personnel vehicle, a soldier inside turns off the music on the radio. The jauntiness on their faces is replaced by pensive expressions as they all return the sergeant's uncertain gaze.
Captain says we're moving out. So...
Hey, that cat needs a friend. And a hug.
It was just before Desert Storm. We were on a routine recon inside Iraqi-controlled terrain assessing enemy troop strength. for what Saddam Hussein promised would be the mother of all wars. I'm in the lead vehicle with Sergeant Shaw and our guide, a civilian contractor. Night is clear, stars, no moon.
Two vehicles lurch towards them.
Ambush!
The personnel carrier rounds an enemy vehicle.
Hang on.
The captain swings the jeep towards the insurgents as his men come under fire.
Get a flare up, Sergeant.
The captain returns fire with a machine gun. Soldiers pour from their vehicle, firing back. The captain covers them with the machine gun mounted on the jeep. Through his night goggles, he sees an Arab about to launch a rocket attack and shoots him. Two helicopters approach. From the open door of one, soldiers fire.
Captain Marco!
Marco falls to the ground.
So, was you scared?
Scared? Well, there was really no time to be scared. With complete disregard for his own life, Sergeant Ranger Shaw engaged single-handedly an entire company of the enemy.
Washington, D.C. today.
Sergeant Shaw was awarded the Medal of Honor. I signed the recommendation myself. Yes, sir.
Were you wounded?
I was injured. Concussion, lost focus. Sergeant Shaw, he took command.
Major?
Yes.
Did your unit sustain any casualties?
Yes. PFC Edwin Ingram, PFC Robert Baker III were killed. Now, the Medal of Honor, Congressional Medal of Honor, is the highest award that any soldier could aspire to. What these brave men that I've talked about today did should never be forgotten. Since 1917, there have only been 970 medals awarded out of a total of 30 million Americans at arms. Who knows? Maybe one day one of you fine young men will earn that medal in defense of this great nation.
Marco is addressing a troop of scouts.
Yes.
Major Marco, on behalf of troops 1094 and 1128, just want to thank you for coming to speak to us about the Medal of Honor and about your interesting experiences in the armed forces.
Thanks for listening.
A question from a man standing at the back of the hall.
Did you ever wish it had been you?
I'm sorry, excuse me?
Won no medal. Been the hero.
Well, sir, I'm just proud that I was there. Thank you.
Wearing his major's uniform, Marco leaves the stage. The scouts and their parents get out of their seats. A bearded man who asked the question lurks unsteadily at the back of the hall. He wears a suit, but is tieless. Outside, on a playing field, kids have a game of basketball. The bearded man waits in the lobby.
Major Marco.
Yes.
Al Melvin, sir.
Marco looks him up and down.
Corporal Melvin.
Melvin salutes.
From your unit, Desert Storm.
Corporal Melvin. How you doing?
Marco hugs him.
I have these dreams, sir.
Dreams?
Yes, sir. Kuwait. You and me, Ingram and Baker and Raymond Shaw. See, I remember it happened like you just said, and then I don't.
Well, we had it pretty rough over there. That was a long time ago, memory shift.
Melvin has a crazed look.
But do you have dreams, sir?
Everybody has dreams, Corporal.
No, not these.
No, I don't.
He holds up a scrapbook.
Write it all down, you know, like every night, right when I wake up, try to get it down. It didn't always come together, you know, not everything that I can remember.
Maybe you should go to the VA hospital and talk to one of the doctors.
I bet the doctor's mad.
He drops his scrapbook and bends to pick it up.
I'm just a little stuck, sir. Because I remember, okay, Shaw. Shaw, okay. Shaw saving us, right? But that doesn't make sense. Because that should have been you. Okay, if Shaw is in the Hummer, the Toyota is here.
All right, just get up. Get up. Listen, it's over with. That's done. You gotta move on.
And I was hoping is that, you know, maybe if
you need some money or something.
No, sir. Wait, I don't need your money, man.
All right. It's great to see you.
With a mixture of unease and discomfort, Marco leaves his former corporal facing the wall in the lobby. He glances back at the gibbering man, concern etched on his face. Later, Marco stands at the checkout desk of a supermarket deep in thought. An attractive black woman wearing a turban and dangling earrings processes the few items he's bought, which include a romantic paperback and pot noodles.
Paper or plastic, sir?
At his home, the TV news is on.
Public anxiety being rekindled by the events of Bloody Friday, with the war on terror continuing into yet another year, no end in sight, the worries just continue to grow. Polls indicate that more and more voters are concerned with personal family safety, with economic security, fearing more and more jobs going overseas or being taken by illegal immigrants. Concerned with the quality of air and our water, the degradation caused by the rollback in environmental regulations, by religious and racial polarization, with the drumbeat of body bags coming from all over the globe. The American people are ready for a new agenda, but because this party is so divided on so many issues, the choice of a vice presidential nominee may very well be the unifying factor for delegates at this convention.
And if this respect propels me toward the nomination as your vice presidential candidate, I will be greatly honored. We need to look inward, attend to our own house. The danger to our country is not only from some terrorists at large, terrorists who, by the way, we've helped engender with 20 years of failed foreign policy. No, the real danger is from suspending civil liberties, gutting the Bill of Rights, allowing our fear to destroy our democratic ideals. Because once we start overturning our constitutional protections, our enemies have won.
Raymond Shaw watches the same program.
Raymond? Oh, darling. Shoot. What, were you going to make me stand out there like room service?
I asked downstairs and Miss Freeman... Mm-hmm. Your wrangler?
Mm-hmm.
Helpful, Miss Freeman. She said you were up here practicing your speech. I don't honestly understand why you insist upon isolating yourself, Raymond. People adore you. They crave your company. And yet here you are, holed up as if you were some sort of emotionally challenged individual like your father. Shut up, Tom. Instead of Raymond, Prentice Shaw. Handsome, intelligent, people-loving war hero with a great deal to offer his party.
No.
And his country.
No.
No what?
No.
I haven't even asked your question yet.
No to the question you're going to ask. No to all of the questions
your
you
hair
pretend
is too
to
flat.
Want to ask. And no, you may not engage in your usual backdoor political thuggery to shovel me onto the presidential ticket.
No, tie's wrong. Something less busy. Oh, you're not interested.
Of course I'm interested. I wouldn't be here if I wasn't, but not if it means attacking the reputation of a statesman like Tom Jordan, which I am sure was part of your plan.
Excuse me, when have I ever attacked Senator Jordan? Despite...
Despite what?
Despite the shameful way his daughter toyed with you that summer at the shore.
You chased her away, Mother. Let's not have any
illusions. Oh, she wasn't even in your league, but if that's the way you choose to remember
it... You destroyed any possibility of us ever...
Honey, you are oversimplifying things a little bit, but it's okay. I'll stay out of it.
She gives a mock salute.
You have my word.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think
mother, Senator Eleanor Prentice Shaw.
Backstage, his mother and political aides watch on a monitor.
And some of you, no doubt, remember my father, the late Senator John Shaw. I've been honored to serve my two terms in Congress. But I also grew up on the Hill. I've seen how the game is played by professionals, how deals are struck, committees bullied, agendas bought and sold. And with apologies to my mother, I wish to remain an amateur.
At home, Marco also watches.
I believe democracy is not negotiable. I believe that freedom from fear in the world at large and here at home is not negotiable.
I know how much Americans have to fear today. But I can tell you that I've been there. I've faced the enemy firsthand on the battlefield. And I know what it is to be afraid. But I am living proof that we can win.
We can prevail. We must secure tomorrow today. Thank you.
Eleanor Shaw and the aides pace along a corridor past a marching band.
Loving?
That was the inference.
They should be down on their fat white knees thanking me for saving this party from committing a political seppuku.
You gave them every opportunity to do the right thing, sir.
No, I gave them one opportunity, and that was unusually generous of me. See if you can get a hold of Bob Arthur, because I'm going to want to meet with him. Thank you very much for raising this.
She's all smiles as they enter the campaign office.
Mr. Secretary.
Senator.
Thank you very much for taking this meeting.
Good to see you.
Nice. Leona.
Nice to see you again.
So nice to see you, Leona. Buddy.
Gentlemen.
A dark-suited man's on the phone.
We settled it this morning. I think it busted.
He joins the others.
The decision is final.
Thank you very much. How's Janine?
Senator.
I'm so glad.
Tom Jordan's on the ticket now. We don't need your blessing, but we'd like it.
Oh, okay, so before we get started, I'm just dying to know. Which genius hatched the idea of pairing a soundbite from Nebraska with a relic who thinks that keeping suicide bombers off our buses is unconstitutional? Was it you, Gordy?
All the research indicates that an Arthur Jordan ticket sits quite well with the American people.
Sits quite well translates into how many votes?
Your son is largely unknown outside of New York. I mean, his public service, his congressional record, while commendable, is not the kind
My
of thing
My son
that
is
we...
a war hero.
Governor Arthur has agreed to consider Raymond for a cabinet-level post.
Well, we didn't come here to have a discussion. Did we come here to
Senator...
have a discussion?
Now, Ellie, you don't have the votes to block this. Not even to push the nomination to a second ballot.
Oh, Jim, even running against this cut-and-fold vice president with his party's record of abysmal failure at home and abroad, Governor Arthur is still unelectable to the presidency. Without help, consider that our intrepid Arthur can hold on to his own home ground and the Northeast and even California. We are still dead across the South.
He's not dead completely in the
and
South,
the
Senator.
Southwest, absolutely where not. They win by landslides. I mean, you know this. Your focus groups, your polls all tell you this. They back me up, right? Now, you're counting on Tom Jordan to help you get the black vote, women, and college kids. My gut instinct says he won't. And on Arthur to somehow hold the center where he is soft at best.
We're confident. This is a winning ticket, Ellie.
What's your margin of error, Vaughn? 5 points? 3? I can swing that, and you know it. Ooh, I could swing 7 away from you. That's more than enough to split the ticket.
And deny us the White House another 4 years? No. No, not even you. Not even you, Senator, will do that. You are bluffing.
Oh, no, Senator. I would and I will, and I will do whatever is necessary to protect America from anyone who opposes her. I can't. Am I the only person in this room who's been reading these NSA reports?
I've read them.
All right, then you know we are on the brink of another cataclysm, probably nuclear, on our own soil.
Oh, Ellie, that's a bit extreme.
And it's not from random terrorists, but from covert alliances of disaffected nations who have all been made bold by this kind of Jordan one-worlder who believes that human beings are essentially good and that our power is somehow, I don't know, shameful or evil or never to be used. Make no mistake, the American people are terrified. They know something's coming. They can feel it. and we can either shovel them the same old shit and call it sugar, or we can arm them. We can arm them with a young, vibrant vice president. We can give them heat, energy, give them a war hero with heart, forged by enemy fire in the desert in the dark, when American lives hung in the balance.
The senior party officials and politicians look from one to the other. A political speech is relayed on background monitors with the sound turned down. The dark-suited man slowly and apprehensively approaches Eleanor.
Give us a few minutes. Thank you.
Mr. Secretary, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Ellie.
Well, they're going to have to make their own decisions.
I am proud to offer into nomination the name of the next Vice President of these United States, Raymond Shaw!
A remarkable development. 24 hours ago, New York Congressman Raymond Prentice Shaw wasn't even being mentioned as a possible candidate for the vice presidential nomination 4 years from now, much less this current convention.
Some incredible news from the convention floor tonight. Like a long shot catching the favorite on the backstretch of the Kentucky Derby, Raymond Shaw has overtaken Senator Thomas Jordan to gain the vice presidential nomination.
Raymond Shaw bears the lineage of the fabled Prentice family dynasty, grandson of legendary industrialist and diplomat Tyler Prentice, son of controversial Senator Eleanor Prentice Shaw, who took over the seat vacated by her husband, the esteemed John Shaw, when he died, tragically, over 20 years ago. For many, Raymond Prentice Shaw is an enigma, the millionaire Harvard honors student who enlisted in the infantry, refusing the officer's commission to which he was entitled. Media shy and reclusive, Raymond Shaw's life was forever changed on the killing fields of Kuwait, where he won the Congressional Medal of Honor for combat bravery. Two members of Sergeant Shaw's famed Lost Patrol, Private First Class Edward Ingram and Private First Class Robert Baker III, were killed. Their guide, a civilian contractor, disappeared in the ambush. But Sergeant Shaw heroically fought off the enemy and guided the shell-shocked survivors of the Lost Patrol across hostile terrain to safety.
Raymond Shaw is probably the kindest, bravest, warmest, most selfless human being I've ever known.
A celebrated war hero who dedicated himself to public service after Desert Storm. The Medal of Honor winner, beloved by the men of the Lost Patrol. Quickly turned his energies to public service in his adopted state of New York. Running revolutionary science and biogenetics.
Captain Mongo!
I'm blown down by the
revolutionary science of biogenetics.
The revolutionary science of biogenetics, which is literally
Captain Mongo!
Most selfless human being I've ever known. Raymond Shaw is probably the kindest, bravest,
yet not the complexity of the front alone.
Captain. Help me.
Sergeant Shaw?
Captain.
Suffocate Private Baker. Kill him.
Raymond Shaw is probably the kind of Shaw is just along this phone.
In a flashback, Marco sees himself and his men being brainwashed in a laboratory.
Excellent. Excellent. Keep going, Raymond.
Under orders, Shaw has suffocated Private Baker. In front of the White House, a soldier checks IDs. A party is being held in the grounds. Two Arabs in full headdress and kaftan stroll among the guests. In a glass-domed tropical garden, Marco accompanies two senior uniformed officers, also at the party.
No offense, Major, but it sort of chaps my ass that we have to have a babysitter.
No, just here to make sure you don't get cornered by some Air Force general's unhappy wife.
Major Marco,
we should be so lucky.
So nice to meet you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Raymond Shaw.
Major
Marco, this army of two are going to do some recon at the No Host Bar.
On behalf of a failed foreign policy, which has only served to galvanize our enemies.
Excuse me, please.
In fact, mobilizing an ersatz army of malcontents.
General Sloan, you lead the charge.
And if America doesn't pay attention to this threat,
General Sloan, America.
Good. Have you met my wife?
Hello.
Hello, Bob Arthur. I mean, isn't that supposed to be the point of this great country of ours? That everybody matters, not just the people at this party.
Glowing with pride, Eleanor sidles up to her son.
But perhaps more importantly, those who can't afford to be here.
Raymond. Sorry to interrupt.
You're a remarkable young man.
Bob? I can't believe
you. You know my daughter?
Of course, Johnson. Good to see you again.
Mark.
Eleanor. Raymond, your granddad would be so goddamn proud of you.
Thank you, Mr. Weiner.
Raymond, this is J.B. Johnston. Yes. From Manchurian Global.
Hi, how are you?
Pleasure.
And David Donovan, their managing director.
And co-chair of the U.S. International Policy Caucus.
Strong supporters, Congressman.
They're desperate to be of service to you, darling.
Thank you, Mother. I think you've earned your fee.
Oh, no. My plucky idealist.
So, gentlemen. How's business?
Not bad, Raymond. Business is not bad.
It could always be better.
Oh, any better? You guys are going to have more assets than the European Union.
Don't we already?
Every great society, every great civilization, always anchored by a great nation.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Nice to see you, Bob. Thanks for coming, Captain. Congressman?
Shaw stares suspiciously at Marco.
Ben Marco. I know. Hello, Captain. How you doing?
I need to talk to you. Okay.
Oh, my God, Raymond, it's been so many years.
And?
And I've been married, I've been divorced.
Yeah, well, you may have noticed I've changed a bit myself.
No, that's not... No, yes, I have noticed. I see him. It's great. Congratulations.
My feelings haven't, though. Changed, I mean.
What feelings? What?
Jocelyn, I have never stopped wondering how things might have turned out between us if my mother hadn't.
Raymond, people can't just rewrite their lives.
I haven't had a relationship of any consequence since we stopped seeing each other. Doesn't that say something to you?
Yeah. You must be just about the loneliest person on this earth. Raymond, we were kids then. It must have been, what, 15 years ago? It was sweet, but...
Josh?
Her father.
Yeah. I have to go.
No.
Best of luck with the campaign.
Thank you.
Marco approaches.
Josh,
Sergeant Raymond Shaw.
A Secret Service agent lingers uncertainly.
I want to talk to you two. Excuse me, sir. I know you're busy, Congressman. Don't touch me. I'm sorry. It's just that, Don't ever touch me.
As Shaw walks off, the Secret Service agent blocks Marco.
Hello, Major. You tried the pad time. I'm told it rules.
The agent smiles mockingly. Marco walks off looking puzzled and concerned. Now a military hearing.
What were you hoping Congressman Shaw would say?
I don't know, sir. It's not so much what he said or didn't say. It was more of his attitude, his demeanor.
Are you taking your meds?
Lieutenant Colonel Howard, with all due respect, I've had over a dozen years of experts telling me that I have Gulf War syndrome, I have post-traumatic stress disorder, and every other mood disorder that you can name. In those 12 years, I've been a good soldier. And I've denied what every nerve ending in my body is telling me is more real than not. I've had one dream, not variations on a dream, the same dream, night after night.
No, over no. I'm sorry. You're saying that entire squad of U.S. Army soldiers was hypnotized into believing that Raymond Shaw deserved the Medal of Honor. And that somehow, thanks to your dream, you're the only one who knows the truth. Major Marco, you will stay clear of Congressman Shaw.
Two stenographers stared at Marco, embarrassed for him. He looked stunned.
And you are to resume your medication. That is an order.
That'll be all, Major.
Somewhere right now, an American soldier in the war on terror is worried about his family back home. Somewhere right now, in some small American town, his grandmother is standing in her kitchen. She's got her medicine bottle in one hand. She's opening the refrigerator with the other, and she's thinking, I can pay for my medicine, or I can pay for my dinner. I can't do both. I don't believe that our mothers and grandmothers should have to face that kind of decision, not in this country. I don't believe that the brave men and women of our armed forces, risking their lives overseas, should have to worry about their families back here in America. You see, there are some gaps in this country, deep chasms that we need to bridge. The gap between rich and poor, between government and the people, between true security and the notion of feeling safe.
Second floor, room 3, end of hall.
Between what is real...
Don't you just love this guy?
And what is not. Tough choices are an unavoidable element of leadership. I would just urge the governor to remember that the primary responsibility of
the government is While the caretaker watches Shaw on TV behind a desk protected by a metal grill, Marco, now in civilian clothes, climbs the staircase in the rundown apartment block. He walks along a narrow hallway and pauses at a door marked number 3.
Al Melvin? Al, it's Ben Marco. You in there?
Flanked by Secret Service agents and political aides, Shaw leaves a lift and walks towards a luxury suite, muttering to himself.
Sir, we'll be right outside.
What?
We'll be right outside, sir.
I know. Good night.
Good night, sir.
Shall I get that for you, sir?
No.
Good night, sir.
Good night.
Shaw looks confused and disoriented as he slowly approaches the ringing telephone.
You have 30 seconds, Mother.
Am I that predictable?
You have no idea.
I'm calling to compliment you, Mr. Grumpy.
I thought you were magnificent tonight. And so did all the network campaign experts.
And that compassionate vigilance thing is working quite well for you.
I might have to convert.
I happen to believe in it.
Oh, yes, of course you do. Now, Raymond?
Good night, Mother.
Raymond? What? No, wait.
Hang on a second.
What? Raymond? Are you there?
Yes.
Sergeant Shaw?
Who is this?
Sergeant Raymond Shaw?
Yes.
Raymond Prentice Shaw?
He smiles, intoxicated by a feeling of delight and well-being.
Yes.
Listen. Go to the bedroom of your suite. Enter the hallway there. Go to the end and open the closet.
His eyes stare transfixed as he carries out the instructions. In the bedroom, there's an ambience of eerie white light which reflects on his face and casts his well-cut suit a lighter shade of blue. As he opens the doors of the closet, two armed men in black uniforms and matching hoods remove a wall at the back, revealing a secret room with an operating theater, staffed by technicians in white coats and surgical masks. The man who spoke to him on the phone is the only one without a mask.
Hello, Raymond.
Hello.
Do you remember me?
No, sir, I don't.
Brilliant. We've got 20 minutes for a little checkup from the neck up, gentlemen, so if we could take his jacket, please sit down.
Marco's on a payphone.
No, Mr. Villalobos, I'm just... The Army's got me gathering information on stress disorder, so I'm just... just running statistics, trying to find out about my OT.
He makes another call.
Well, listen, Mr. Wilson, when Nathan came home, was he preoccupied with Kuwait? I mean, did he have nightmares or bad dreams about the firefight over there?
Why? Marco is photographed. Meanwhile, in the secret room.
Feel a little cold as this anesthetic gel goes on.
Shaw's head is in a medical clamp.
Probe sheath and probe. Please relax. Are you relaxed, Raymond?
Yes, sir.
Now, Raymond, I'm going to drill a tiny hole in the skull, which will allow delivery of the new implant. So what you'll feel is a little discomfort in the form of pressure and also a loud vibrating noise in your head, all of which, of course, is completely normal.
Shaw blinks, but lies dispassionately as the hole is drilled into his skull. The drill bit is removed, revealing dust-like particles from the incision. Marco revisits the rundown apartment block where Melvin lives. He strolls casually down the narrow hallway, which is illuminated by stark lights hanging from the ceiling. He stops at room number 3. A man appears at the end of the hallway and lingers for a few moments, glancing at Marco, who returns his gaze. When the man disappears, Marco produces a blade from his pocket and inserts it into the locking mechanism. He slices up and down in the narrow gap between the door and the wood securing it. He tries the handle and the door opens. Marco pauses at the open door, staring into the shabby room. He looks around for a light switch and finds it to the left of the door. The light bulb hangs without a shade. On a wall directly ahead of him, there are crazed scribblings. He looks around the room before closing the door. On another wall, he sees a photograph of the men in his platoon. The face of Sergeant Raymond Shaw has been partially scratched out. There are drawings of distorted faces which he recognizes from his own recurring dream. He sees a press clipping stuck on the wall amid the montage of graffiti. It chronicles the winning of Shaw's congressional seat. He moves closer to read it. Shaw is still on the operating table in the secret room.
Thank you. Of course, as soon as this or any task is completed, you will already have forgotten that it ever actually took place. Probe going in now.
The progress of the probe inserted in his skull is monitored on a large screen.
Good. Excellent. Releasing implant. There, that wasn't so bad, was it, Raymond?
No, sir.
It's good. No decay, no slippage. Everything seems to be in flawless working condition.
Marco leafs through a scrapbook he's found at Melvin's apartment. There's a montage of confused drawings and a photograph of Shaw drawn over to show red splinters coming from his eyes and tentacles coming out of his head. Another photograph with a swastika drawn on the forehead and a sketch of a person with surgical probes attached to the chest and holding a gun. Marco sighs with a disturbed look in his eyes.
Now, Raymond, can you remember the deaths of Private Baker and Private Ingram?
Yes, sir.
Good. Can you describe them for me, please?
We're on a routine recon inside Iraqi-controlled terrain, assessing troop strength. The mission ends without incident. We're heading back
toward the command. Night is clear, stars.
The night is clear, stars, but no moon. Patrol is ambushed. We're engaged unexpectedly by ground forces with helicopter support. RPG incoming, mortar fire. Captain Marco is knocked unconscious. In the ensuing firefight, Eddie Ingram gets himself separated to the left. Baker goes after him. An incoming mortar shell kills them both instantly before I'm able to locate and eliminate the source of the ordnance.
Later, Marco absently reads a newspaper on a train. He looks up, startled.
Pardon me, is this seat taken? I see the captain enjoys the road less traveled.
He He stares in disbelief as the civilian contractor who is his guide in Kuwait takes a seat. He looks again and the seat is empty. He removes his glasses and starts cleaning them. One of the headlines in his paper reads, "New military contracts given to Manchurian Global."
Paper plastic.
A pretty black woman joins him.
Oh, come on. From the grocery store, you know, at the checkout stand, paper plastic girl, that's me. Paper plastic, sir? I see you there all the time. Bennett, Marco, checks from First National Bank. Romance novels, instant noodles, nodos and tomatoes.
He looks at her blankly.
So, anyway, I'm on vacation. Holiday in the Big Apple and all that. And I saw you sitting here and I said, hey, why not reach out and touch someone? So what? I suppose you're heading to New York City?
Yeah.
Business, pleasure, both?
Well, I got an old friend up there, old army friend that, he's politics now, and I'm just gonna catch up on old times with him. So you said your name was?
Eugenie.
What do your friends call you?
My friends, they call me Rosie.
Rosie?
Yeah, see, my full name is Eugenie Rose. I like the Rosie part better. Eugenie is, well, fragile.
Yeah, but still, when I asked you your name, you didn't say... What'd you say? You said, Eugenie.
Yeah. Well, maybe I was feeling fragile at the time.
His eyes widen in horror as he sees a small hole appear in her forehead with blood trickling from it. Realizes he's hallucinating and makes a dash for the toilet. He glances back at the puzzled face of Rosie, who stares after him. He stands in the toilet with sweat dripping down his face. He crosses to the wash basin beneath a large mirror and swallows a pill. He washes it down with a swig of water. He takes his glasses off and refreshes his face with water. Through the mirror, he sees the door open. Standing in the doorway, a doctor in a white coat, the same man who drilled into Shaw's head. He turns round and there's nobody there. He studies the locked door with a look of terror and slowly turns back to the mirror.
Hello, Captain. Do you remember me?
Now, Pennsylvania Station in New York. Marco, wearing a raincoat and clutching his baggage, stands on the rising escalator. There's a perplexed, faraway look in his eyes. He slowly walks from the escalator, looking around expectantly. He's unaware that Rosie is close behind him, concerned about his strange behavior.
Ben. Hey. Gonna get a cab. You want me to drop you somewhere?
No, I'm okay.
Okay, so your friend's gonna meet you here then?
No.
El Dorado 59970. It's my cell phone number in case you ever, you know. I like to say it the old fashioned way. Can you remember or should I write it on your chest with a Sharpie?
I'll remember.
Okay. Hey. You need somewhere to go to freshen up?
Pentagon watchdogs today accused the private equity fund Manchurian Global of grossly overpricing plasma and other critical medical supplies during the recent Indonesian incursion, even as the company secured a $500 million no-bid contract to provide combat support services to American soldiers preparing to mobilize in Sri Lanka.
A yellow cab pulls up in a tree-lined street. Rosie pays the driver and leads Marco into an apartment block. She unlocks a door marked with the letter B.
There you go. Come on in. It's my cousin's apartment.
She here?
No. Yet ever so humble. No place like home, right? Believe it or not, there's a view. Go to the fire escape and tilt your head out. You can... almost see a tree. Can I get you something to drink?
No, I'm fine.
Gosh, I'm I got some dieter's tea. It's great for your metabolism if you're into that. Or some tomato juice. No? All right. Or some water?
Nothing.
I'm sorry. I'm nervous. I yak when I get nervous.
Where is she, your cousin?
She's on tour with Dreamgirls.
He stands with his hands in his raincoat pocket and glances at theatrical posters on a wall of the comfortable apartment.
Are you okay?
Yeah. Look, I'm sorry about what happened earlier.
You don't have to apologize to me. I'll make you some tea.
Behind frosted glass in the bathroom, Marco takes a shower in a white-tiled cubicle. Two pink towels hang neatly on a rail. As he rubs soap and water over his body and neatly cropped hair, he makes a discovery. He feels a small lump just beneath his left shoulder blade. He fingers the swelling curiously and cranes his neck round to try to see exactly what it is.
You okay in there?
Yeah, I'm fine.
You know, I left you some towels in there. Did you see them?
Uh-huh.
What was that?
Dropped my bag.
He rummages through a cupboard and searches a toilet bag. Rose is about to knock on the bathroom door, but thinks better of it.
Ben? Are you okay in there? Earth to Ben.
Yeah.
You sure everything's all right?
Yes.
He's produced a knife.
Ben?
He makes an incision into the lump on his back, producing blood.
Ah!
Ben?
Ah!
Ben? Ben?
With his fingers, he pulls out a tiny metallic disc.
Ben?
An anguished-looking Rosie opens the door and the disc slips from his fingers into the wash basin and down the plug hole. He frantically probes the plug hole with his finger to try to recover the disc. Rosie stares at him with concern and confusion. Perspiration glistens on his body as he sticks the knife into the plug hole.
What are you doing?
Later, Marco consults a scientist friend.
I wasn't hallucinating, Delp. I held it in my hand.
That's what they all say, Marco. Some wicked shit got sprayed on you guys during Desert Storm, besides all the depleted uranium, I mean.
Mm.
I personally know of a couple of rangers who swear that they see only in tertiary colors now.
Delp.
And can't pick up sports talk radio in their cortical block if they get too close to a combat transformer.
It's not Gulf War syndrome.
They talk in Delp's laboratory, which has skyline views of New York.
The Army did try this tiny implantable ID thing. You could embed it under the skin and scan it like a barcode for medical emergency information. Blood type, DNA.
Well, the Army never put one in me.
That you know of, man.
Delp glances furtively at Marco. Marco stares back, searching his eyes for an explanation. Now views of New York ashore is being chauffeur-driven.
U.S. planes bombed selected sites in Guinea today, acting on intelligence that the African nation's military regime had secretly resumed its chemical weapons program. The Secretary of Defense declined to comment on the attack, saying only that the mission was successful, targets acquired, that all American personnel involved here were home safe and sound.
Striking transportation workers crippled Lima again today.
My dreams seem more real to me than what I actually remember happening over there. It's like somewhere along the line I got brainwashed or something, and I I'm just like all scrambled up.
We have all been brainwashed, Michael. As for somebody embedding electric probes and computer chips in your brain to make you do things, it's horseshit, man. A little electroshock and sleep deprivation will do the trick for a fraction of the price. Ask your specs.
What about my dream?
What if all this is your dream? And you are really still back in Kuwait?
From a leather armchair, Marco looks thoughtfully at Delp. A motorcade led by police Outback riders comes to a halt. Shaw's hard-looking Secret Service man leaps from the front passenger seat of the second car and opens the rear door for Shaw. Smiling, Shaw waves to the onlookers.
Thanks for coming out. Thank you.
Microphones are pushed towards Shaw.
Why did you and Governor Arthur oppose deploying troops into Indonesia?
Well, Governor Arthur and I believe we can't clean up the world with dirty hands.
Sergeant Shaw! You have a dream about Kuwait?
Captain Marco.
Marco heaves his way through the crowds.
Nice to see you, sir.
Good to see you, too.
Yeah.
Why did you ask me about Kuwait?
I didn't. I asked you about your dreams.
Thank you, Lily.
Congressman Shaw, I'm sorry. They want to know if you can do an interview with Larry King at 6?
No.
No to the interview and no to 6.
No, he wants to talk about my mother. No. Everything under control, PJ?
Good to see you.
So, Captain, what can I do for you?
Just need a few minutes of your time.
Congressman Shaw, a moment,
private
please.
Private time.
Unfortunately, this is as private as it gets for me now.
No, I understand.
He's all right, Will.
Come on. Thank you.
We don't actually have that calendar.
Hey, George. There are these dreams that some of the men from our unit have been having.
Including you?
Well, it's more of a question of what actually happened the night that our patrol got attacked.
That's easy. We're on a routine recon inside Iraqi-controlled terrain. The patrol is ambushed. RPG incoming, mortar fire. You're not...
unconscious, exactly the way... not to cut you off, but I mean exactly the way that I remember it. But I dreamed something else.
Am I in your dreams, Captain?
Yes, you are, Congressman.
Saving everybody.
It's a whole lot more complicated than that. Now, Corporal Melvin, he's been drawing these pictures and he wrote down what he dreams. And maybe if you
I
just
don't
take...
have dreams, Captain.
At all? You mean you don't dream at all? Everybody dreams,
but
right?
Captain, I'd like to help you. I would. I really would. But
if you,
I think you ought to see somebody. Somebody who specializes.
I've been to doctors.
Well, good. That's very good, because they can probably help you out a lot more than I can.
I don't know, but...
Take care, Captain.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming by.
Okay.
Shaw leaves him and mounts an escalator. Marco shakes his head in frustration.
Not crazy, Shaw.
Marco starts to leave as Shaw calls after him.
Major! Ben! Are you hungry?
I'm starving.
He beckons for Marco to follow him up the escalator.
Well, it depends on the demographic.
Excuse me.
I killed Baker.
Well, it's a dream. I mean, it could mean something else. It could mean I'm supposed to think you did.
No. I killed the enemy. I didn't know them either, so it was okay. Anyway, I remember what we did in Kuwait. I remember it perfectly. I just don't remember actually doing it.
Maybe you didn't do it.
Shaw throws him a stern glance, but then his face softens.
A thought.
They sit at a desk in the campaign office. Shaw flips through the pages of Melvin's scrapbook. As he sees the crazed drawings, Marco studies his face for reaction. Behind them, a TV monitor highlights the campaign slogan, Secure Tomorrow.
What?
Shaw closes the scrapbook.
Life is so bizarre, isn't it?
Which part?
I don't know what you saw downstairs. This campaign, politics, my whole public life and persona. I'm posing and grinning like a goddamn sock puppet. Shaking hands with total strangers and must be completely blind if they can't see what I am at the core. But my mother has made me apprentice. Ferociously apprentice. But not a Shaw, no sir.
I see.
No, you don't. can't. I was 20 years old before I had a friend. Worse, a girlfriend. Well, you know, from my point of view anyway. A friend outside of my mother's circle of approved encounters, and she, my mother, God only knows what she told Jocelyn to chase her away, precipitating my sole act of rebellion, storming off and enlisting in the army. But after the war, I came back to her.
Why'd you come back? What happened?
Weren't you listening? Mother happened. You know, the truth is I hate it. I've always despised the middle, the cloying adulation of little people. It's certainly nothing for you to be jealous of, Major.
I'm not jealous.
I don't have the dreams, Ben.
How could you not remember saving our unit?
I do. I said I did.
No, no, you didn't. You said that you didn't remember doing it. That's what you just said a couple minutes ago.
When I think about that night, it's as if I know it will happen. The thing is, I never seem to get to the point where I feel that it actually does happen. But I'm sure that's perfectly normal.
Okay, well, have you discussed this with anyone, these discrepancies?
Who would I share that with? My old army buddies who love and adore me for saving their pathetically unimportant present company excluded asses.
You could discuss it with army intelligence. You could go down there. I mean, I could go with you and discuss it, and you could tell them what you remember, what you don't remember, and they could run some tests. And...
Yeah, tests. Preston wouldn't feel bad with that.
Somebody put an implant inside me. I found it this morning. I got the hole in my back, if you want to take a look at it. And I got a good feeling they put one in you, too.
Shaw leans back, cupping his hand over his mouth.
Nobody's put anything in me, Ben.
Let's prove it. Why don't, you know, we'll go get an X-ray.
I want to be supportive of you. I do. But don't you think this could wait till after the election?
Why? For what? For what? What are you scared of?
I'm not afraid of anything.
Then why don't we just prove it? Well, we can
you
find
know what?
Out.
I think you should leave. I'm sorry. I really think...
Listen. Somebody got into our heads with big steel-toed boots, cable cutters, and a chainsaw, and they went to town. Neurons got exposed, and circuits got rewired. Our brain cells got obliterated, Raymond. Please.
You need to get help, Ben.
What are you doing?
Marco grabs him and propels him headfirst onto the desk. He forces his shirt up and squeezes the flesh on his back. He bites into his back, drawing blood. Security men rush in. Shaw's hand goes to the wound on his back as Marco is pulled away and handcuffed. As Marco's bundled away, Shaw stares icily at him. The two men's eyes lock.
Are you okay, sir? Wait, no. Sir, we should have that.
Get out!
The security man leaves and closes the door on others, trying desperately to see what's going on. With his shirt still disheveled, Shaw again puts his hand to his back and looks deeply troubled. Behind him, the American flag is stretched out on the wall. In a police interrogation room, Marco is shown photographs of the dead body of Melvin. The hands are clenched on silt and mud. Dried blood is on the left eye and around the mouth. Some of the photos bear a red stamp saying evidence. Marco gulps at the sight of them.
We fished him out of the Potomac River about 4:45 yesterday afternoon.
What were you doing in Al Melvin's apartment?
I went to talk to him. He wasn't home.
Talk about what? Dreams?
Melvin's scribblings are placed on the table.
Interesting stuff.
Yeah, there's hundreds of those in his place. You should have your people check it out.
Oh, we'll get on that right away.
Colonel Garrett was kind enough to show us the file on you, Marco. You are the real deal, aren't you?
Special Forces, Rangers, Delta.
I wanted to talk to Corporal Melvin to ask him some unanswered questions about our reconnaissance in Kuwait back in 91. He wasn't home.
Right, he wasn't there, so what? You thought it was okay to just break in and wait for him?
I didn't kill him, if that's where you're headed.
Nobody said you did.
Maybe he committed suicide.
What's your obsession with Raymond Shaw?
I'm not obsessed with Raymond Shaw.
Man of his dreams.
You may want to ask your medical examiners to check Melvin's back. Just under the skin, just shy of the scapula, they may find a implant. Just under the skin, left side. They don't look real hard, they won't find it. They could sing that while they're looking for it if they like.
Implants.
That's what I said, I implant.
Yeah, but judging from your file here, apparently, you don't know your shit from your oatmeal, my friend.
Oh, excuse me, this is unnecessary.
You got a problem? Psycho? You look a little angry. Maybe you want to hit me? Go ahead, you can do it.
Hey! Oh,
for God's sake! Ben?
He hit me.
And you want to help him?
No, that would be political suicide. Of course not. I want you to help him.
I can't even imagine why.
Mother, I can assure you I'm as uncomfortable asking you to do this as you are being asked. My campaign people are getting a restraining order against him. He's going on every security watch list, but I won't lock him up. I'm not pressing charges.
What?
I don't know, it's just...
They sit in a restaurant.
I don't want to talk about this right now. Can we get back to the campaign and focus on something that's actually...
Raymond, you don't actually believe his story.
No. But he does. And he's a fine soldier. And if his slim hold on sanity requires that I tolerate his delusions until he can get help, I'll do it. It doesn't diminish me. I'm not afraid of him.
Raymond.
She waves coldly to an aide, leaving another table. She reaches into her bag on the floor.
How much do you actually know about your friend?
She drops a dossier on the table. As Shaw fingers it, she snatches it impatiently and opens it for him. There's page after page detailing Marco's alleged activities. Eleanor looks on prissily as her son reads. There's a page devoted to surveillance. In bold letters, a note warns, security risk, no contact. A medical report says Marco's emotions are erratic. The diagnosis reads Gulf War Syndrome and acute paranoia. There's a photo of Marco sleeping huddled alone.
Oh, that's sad. Poor little tin soldier.
Mother, please.
Well, just imagine how terrified your people were yesterday when Major Marco showed up at campaign headquarters and you invited him in with all they know about him.
I know him. I served under him. He was a good man.
Well, that's what the neighbors always say about serial killers.
In a cell, Marco sits on the floor. A black and a white police officer enter, followed by two senior army officers.
You're out of here. Shaw won't press charges.
Someone from Senator Eleanor Shaw's office called and intervened on your behalf. Major, you've reached the terminal end of the Army's patience. You're relieved of duty, effective immediately.
Yes, sir.
Baron, there is a young neurologist at Walter Reed. His name is Zahn. He's had real success with Gulf War Syndrome. You are instructed to get your affairs in order and report to him first thing Monday morning.
Marco goes to a washroom and looks at his reflection in a mirror. He places a thumb in his mouth and probes his teeth with the thumbnail, eventually finding what he's searching for, a tiny metallic disc lodged between his teeth. Staring at the mirror, he grips the micro-implant between his front teeth before removing it from his mouth. Later, Delp examines it under an electron microscope.
I thought you said you lost it.
A better guy found another one.
These are not supposed to exist.
The implant is highly magnified. Inside, it shows as a web of shimmering, intricate, interlinking patterns.
These are only theoretical.
Marco studies the monitor.
So what does it do?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know. I don't want to know. You don't want to know. Look, it's out of you, and you are still alive. That's the good news.
What's the bad news?
Maybe they know you're here.
The two men exchange worried glances before Delp's face breaks into a half-smile. From a nearby cage, two monkeys with electro-probes attached to their heads watch on with apparent interest.
You said the army implants, they were for emergency medical data, right?
The ones they publicized were. There was a parallel project of all kinds of scary implantables. The Clinton watchdogs finally freaked out about it, closed down.
Parallel project? How'd you know about that?
Manchurian Global funded me to make some of their scary shit. Heard of them? Imagine not just a corporation, Marco, but a goddamn geopolitical extension of policy for every president since Nixon. Cash is king, Marco. Cash is king.
From a medical trolley, Delp picks up a pair of electrodes. Marco removes his jacket and hangs it on a rail.
You sure you want to do this?
Absolutely.
Because I don't.
I'll owe you one.
No. I still owe you. For getting me out of Albania.
Albania.
In jest, Marco slaps Delp's cheek.
What are you doing?
Well, in case I forget things I want to remember.
Marco writes a number on the palm of his hand, followed by the words, Manch Global.
I'm putting you on a cocktail of methoxetol to take the edge off.
The edge off of what?
Getting clarity, or whatever you want to call it. ECT, not being the precise science that, say, leeching is.
You don't think this is going to work?
It's a desperation move, man. But hey, there's a school of thought that says a victim of induced abreaction.
Here he comes.
Marco's eyes close as he lies on a medical table. Probes are attached to his head. As he loses consciousness, Delp places a shield between his teeth to stop him from biting his tongue. Next, Delp places an electrode at each side of Marco's head and presses them to his skull as he watches a monitor. Marco convulses. He relives what's locked in his mind.
Hello, Captain.
With a bandage on his head, he's now running along a stone-built passageway towards an exit and overwhelming bright light. He holds up his hands to shield his eyes. At first, there's just pure white. Then a face comes into view, silhouetted against the brightness. It's the face of Rosie. She's talking to him. He can see her lips moving, but there's only silence at first. She gazes down at him caringly. He returns the gaze, confusion in his eyes.
He said this would happen. Your German friend, your friend. Ben. He said it'd be like a computer system crash. That your brain would shut down, but it would reboot again, and you'd forget all your RAM. Or most of your RAM. Do you remember me? Do you remember me? Ben.
He's in there.
A sense of relief sweeps her face. He's lying in a public park.
How'd I get here?
You called me.
Senator Eleanor Prentice Shaw, does it bother you at all that your son repudiates so many of your more controversial policies?
No, he's his own person. Raymond and I may disagree on certain issues, but I think we share the same fundamental vision of what this country can be.
Which is?
Better. Better and better. Safer, braver, stronger. A beacon of freedom in a world troubled by shadows. America must prevail. The future and survival of modern civilization, democracy, freedom, all depend upon it.
So your son, Congressman Shaw, the vice president's nominee of this party, and you will have to agree to disagree.
Well, if Raymond and future President Arthur can get us there in a more benign...
I was in the park on Friday.
We were in the park on Monday.
Nothing stops me.
When?
Yep.
Yes.
We were flying low, like over the ocean, just the field hospital. And they took us up, this place.
Where? Military?
I don't know. Just state-of-the-art stuff everywhere. Stainless steel and wires and tubes and monitors.
They sit on a bed in Rosie's apartment.
Were you tortured?
No. Yeah. I mean, it was pain, you know. It was like a... It's invasive procedure.
For example? Like what? What do you mean?
Gritting his teeth, he prods his right temple with his finger. He repeats the gesture on her head.
Invasive. See, they were in my head. And they made me... Well, Raymond Shaw, they made him kill somebody. Like it was nothing. Private Robert Baker. That's who it was, his private, one of my soldiers. I think they made me kill somebody, too.
He has a flashback.
Kid named Eddie Ingram.
Private Ingram, stand up. Few steps, please. And if you could secure the door, please, Chris. Captain Marco, stand up. Raymond.
Yes, sir.
There's a gun on the cupboard. Would you please take it and give it to Captain Marco?
Yes, sir.
Here. Captain.
Stop!
Captain Marco. Please shoot Private Ingram.
He points the handgun, and devoid of emotion, he shoots the private who stands facing him. The bullet hits above the eyes.
Now, Raymond, suffocate Private Baker. Kill him.
Marco sits back in a wheelchair and eats pot noodles with chopsticks as Shaw crosses to Private Baker, also in a wheelchair, with his arms tethered. Baker's right eye is swollen and bloodstained. He offers no resistance as Shaw grips his throat.
Keep going, Raymond.
Baker's body shakes. He vomits as the grip gets tighter. As Marco sits with Rosie, remembering the ordeal, he shakes his head in revulsion and horror.
I knew the soldier knows the enemy. I'm in command. That's primary, I know. I thought I knew who the enemy was. My men, they trusted me with their lives. So don't touch me.
She slides her arm off his back.
The person that did this, what was his name? Can you remember? Did he have a name?
He looks at her with tears running down his face.
Men.
They're feeding off of all of our fear. Is their play pen?
Later, the television is on in the living room. A stand-up comic performs on a satire show as the American national flag flaps in the background. Rosie is asleep in an armchair. Behind the closed door of the bathroom, Marco stands in front of the mirror eating pot noodles with chopsticks. He notices the reflection of a ventilation grill high up on the wall behind him. He turns and stares up at it in curiosity. He stands on a stool and peers into the grill. Still holding the pot noodles and chopsticks in his right hand, he pokes his little finger through the grill bars and detects a lens. He realizes he's under surveillance. As he stands back on the bathroom floor, photographs are being taken of him. He partially opens the door to check that Rosie is still sleeping before he creeps out. Feeling a sense of betrayal, he looks at Rosie with a heavy heart. She's curled up on an armchair with a blanket over her. Her head rests on a white pillow. His face hardens as suspicion fills his eyes. He takes her bag into the hallway where he tips out the contents. He rummages through and opens a file. It gives details of his graduation from the Citadel, the Military College of South Carolina. He finds a plastic pack containing microtapes.
So I'm here today, and they'll all have the same church here tomorrow. It won't be the same. Even if we meet eyes again, even if I hold the table for the same run.
Clutching the surveillance information in a folder, he dashes through the streets, arriving at an office block. He stares in dismay around a large room of empty workbenches. Paper is strewn about the floor. He checks the fading message he'd written on his hand before the electroconvulsive treatment. He can still make out the words, Manch Global. He sets off running again through the crowded streets.
Representatives of 58 nations staged a coordinated walkout.
Now a vast resource and information center with a high ceiling and an array of galleries. People stroll on the ground floor, viewing a variety of exhibits. In the reference section, Marco removes his glasses for a photograph to be taken.
Smile if you like. This will just take a minute.
A laminated visitor's pass with his photo pops from a machine. In the computer room, he loads a microtape.
I see you there all the time. Bennett, Marco, checks from First National Bank. Romance novels, instant noodles, nodos and tomatoes.
Old friend up there, old army friend that, well, he's politics now.
What else are we talking about?
What happened to you after you were captured? Black helicopters, secret laboratories, mad scientists, mind drugs, shock torture, and Raymond Shaw.
You don't believe any of it, do you?
Crazy.
It sounds crazy, doesn't it?
It sounds
That's
crazy.
What they wanted me to think, too. It's exactly what they wanted you to think.
What about the other guys from your unit? Where are they?
They're all gone. So-called natural causes, but no one's died of cancer in 97. Villalobos, a car crash. Atkins committed suicide. Jameson died 9/11 Pentagon. Yeah.
Did he have a name?
Who?
The person that did this, Ben. What was his name? Can you remember? Ben.
Yeah.
Did he have a name?
He watches the screen as details of micro-implant developments come up. A photograph shows a research team working for Global Manchurian. He recognizes the face of a man identified as Dr. Atticus Noyle. He types the name into a search engine. A host of information appears about Noyle. It says he was thought to have CIA connections. He was a former head of research at Cape Town University. Now one of 25 scientists accused of performing human experiments on political prisoners. A fugitive from justice, sought for war crimes. Marco looks up from the screen as a revolving security camera on the wall comes to rest pointing at him. He stares glumly back at it before looking along the line of others using the banks of public computers. He goes back to the screen and clicks on the mouse. A moving picture of Noyle appears. Marco puts on his headphones.
We've
only have to look at the enormous strides made in the last decade with the genetic reconfiguration of the noble tomato. What was happening was the tomato was over-ripening in the process and it was losing its flavor. There's actually a very simple procedure, deactivate the gene concern. And the same thing can be applied to ourselves. At a flick of a switch, we can adjust character, change personality. And of course, more importantly, we can offset the ravages of dementia by implanting memory or adjusting the synaptic connections. We can free people from the terrible burden of an emotionally compromised past.
Later in the street.
Oh, hey, well, sorry. Well, watch where you going.
Sorry.
Watch where you going.
Just back up.
Watch it. Shut up.
Marco retrieves his papers from the ground and marches off after a man in a suit bumped into him. Photographs are taken of him. The office of Senator Thomas Jordan.
I called the Pentagon and they told me he's on medical leave.
Uh-huh.
Secret Service, they got him on a couple of their watch and observe lists.
Marco waits next door.
I guess there's been some trouble with this guy involving Congressman Shaw.
Oh?
Among the shareholders in Manchurian Global, were they to ever publish a list, which they won't, you would find former presidents, deposed kings, trust fund terrorists, fallen communist dictators, ayatollahs, African warlords, and retired prime ministers.
Right.
See
right.
what I mean?
Yeah, I get it. They're big. They're huge. They're gigantic. I can't touch them. I get it. I don't want to.
And you bring me rumors and conjecture.
I started with nightmares. Rumors, conjectures. That's a giant leap forward.
Nightmares that you've interpreted using as primary resources, A, your spotty memory, B, the internet, sacred sanctuary of idiots and nutters. That's how they're going to look at this. And C, a crazy man's notebook, along with evidence you chewed out of a man's back, all neatly stitched together with the common thread of a supremely powerful, well-connected private equity fund who, if you ever get anywhere near them, will plead ignorance and be shocked. Right. Shocked to learn right. what some of their subsidiary right. partners are engaged
right.
in.
I could give a rat's ass about Manchurian Global, sir. I could give a rat's ass about them. That is not why I'm here.
Senator Jordan sighs.
I looked you up too, Senator.
Oh?
You were in the Army?
I was drafted. Didn't make much of a soldier, I'm afraid. Let me see.
It's not what I saw on the record. It's not what the record says, sir. And you know how it works. Wars are fought one battle at a time. Battles you win one bullet at a time. And I'd be lying to you if I said that I didn't factor in a huge way the fact that you have a vested personal, political, and patriotic interest in how all of this shakes out. I'd be lying to you.
You're right, Major. I do.
A $5,000 a plate dinner honoring the CEO of Votron Incorporated, the nation's third largest producer of the controversial touchscreen units that will be used in the forthcoming election. Was disrupted last night when protesters disguised as waiters and kitchen staff unleashed a blizzard of symbolic chants from above, resulting in a momentary panic as supporters of presidential hopeful Vice President Edward Nelson fled to exits and dove under tables. Security personnel quickly subdued the protesters, one of whom, a sophomore from Queen College in Oregon.
The man is insane, Tom. Full-blown schizophrenia. He's been stalking Raymond. The FBI is all over this already. I've seen the files. Have you seen them?
All over what?
Your bipolar war buddy has been sharing his dreams with Senator Jordan.
Hello, Raymond.
Hello, Senator. How's Jocelyn?
Have you, fact-checked this with anyone, Tom?
Raymond.
A photograph.
Do you recognize this man?
No.
His name is Atticus Noel. He's a South African scientist and mercenary, someone our CIA turned to for covert mind warfare against the Soviets in Afghanistan, someone who has sold his technology and services to terrorists and rogue states.
And what does he have to do with me?
Major Bennett Marco claims that this man brainwashed you.
In his dreams.
Contrived to have you win the Medal of Honor, and has you poised to be the first privately owned and operated Vice President of the United States.
Sir, I've already spoken with Ben Marco. Unfortunately, he's not a well man.
He's delusional.
Nevertheless, he's pulled from his mad hat some remarkably lucid connections between his dreams of your exploits in Kuwait and this Dr. Noyle and the private equity fund Manchurian Global, your mother's primary political benefactor for the past 15 years.
Oh, come on, Tom. They contribute to half the Senate, both sides of the aisle.
What are you saying?
At the time of Desert Storm, Dr. Atticus Noyle was working under a research grant from Manchurian Global, developing deep implant behavior modification.
Oh, my God.
Rogue scientist, mind control, Manchurian Global.
Tom?
You. Connect the dots, Raymond. Where was your famous lost patrol for those 3 missing days? Eluding capture in the desert or somewhere else, being microwaved by this Atticus Noyle?
Oh, Tom.
I'm sorry, Senator, but what exactly are you suggesting I do?
Bow out gracefully. Personal reasons, an obscure illness. Yield your spot on the ticket and go into seclusion.
Oh, that's what this is about.
And then surrender yourself to federal authorities. Help them trace this thing to its source and address whatever damage may have been done to you. And I'll be waiting for your press announcement first thing in the morning, and then we'll talk.
Tom, if there's any inkling of truth in any of these charges, if anyone has ever harmed a hair on his head, I will find out about it.
You have 12 hours, Senator.
But if it's not true, I will see you impeached on the floor of the Senate and bury you.
She glares at him furiously.
Good night.
It's preposterous. Idiotic story.
Mother, there's something I have to tell you.
What?
I've been having the dreams. Ben said there were tests they could run to see you.
No, why? Where are you going? Sergeant Shaw.
What?
Sergeant Raymond Shaw.
Mother, I...
Raymond Prentice Shaw.
Yes.
Listen.
He stands in the doorway with his back to her. The morning mist rises over a tranquil bay. A house stands on the shore. In one of the bedrooms, a painting of the bay rests on an easel. It's a tastefully furbished room with flowing voile curtains at the two windows. Jocelyn sleeps in a large iron bed under a pale blue-patterned quilt and a crisp white cotton sheet. On a bedside table, a vase of cream roses stands beside a lamp. She turns in her sleep, revealing the top of her satin nightdress. She wakes and glances out of the window behind the bedhead. She sees her father, Senator Jordan, on the calm sea, paddling a kayak. Marco sits on a train, sweating and looking uncomfortable.
Good morning to you all, and welcome to Amtrak's North Annapolis, making station stops at Baltimore, Philadelphia, Newark, New York's Penn Station, and Boston as well.
The mist is still rising off the water into a clear blue sky as Senator Jordan paddles back towards the shore. He sees a figure ahead of him. The figure starts to wave.
Who's that?
At the house, Jocelyn's in the kitchen.
It's Raymond, sir. Oh, don't do that. You're going to get soaking wet, Raymond.
Shaw's wading in the water.
Raymond. I came to apologize, sir. Raymond, what are you doing? I'm sorry. We'll get some help for you, son. It's not your fault, Raymond. It's not your fault.
I'm sorry, sir.
It's your mother.
Waist deep, Shaw grabs the paddle and upturns the kayak, holding it upside down. Still in his seat, Senator Jordan's head is underwater. At the house, Jocelyn puts down the mug she's drinking from. Alarm spreads across her face as she sees the upturned craft. She steps onto the veranda for a clearer view and then dashes to the water's edge.
Dad! Help!
Her father fiercely struggles under the water as she sprints towards him.
God. Daddy! Help!
The senator's mouth is wide open as he hangs upside down. His body becomes motionless. His eyes bulge in terror.
Raymond! What are you doing? What is going on? What is happening? Where's my father?
she desperately tries to tackle Shaw, he overpowers her and forces her head under the water. She stares up at him through the water as he holds her head down, then she stares no more. He looks puzzled, as if he doesn't understand what's happening. He continues to look at her face before lifting his eyes to the sky. Marco somberly watches a TV news report.
The five-term senator and recent frontrunner for his party's vice presidential nomination appears to have accidentally drowned when his kayak overturned near his Chesapeake Bay weekend home. Police say his daughter, 35-year-old Jocelyn, may have been trying to rescue Jordan when she was herself overcome by the icy water. The bodies of Senator Jordan and his daughter were discovered this morning by a crab fisherman who spotted the capsized kayak floating far offshore, nearly a mile from Senator Jordan's residence. Neighbors say the senator was an expert kayaker whose morning trips were a familiar sight along the western bank of the bay.
Governor Arthur, do you have any comment on this tragic event?
Senator Jordan was a statesman of the highest integrity. Tom Jordan was a friend, a damn fine man. A great American. That's all for now. We'll have something for you a little later.
They're the latest target of SEC corruption probes, but private equity fund Manchurian Global confirmed today it is continuing with plans to finance privately owned combat units to relieve beleaguered U.S. troop deployments worldwide. It is a move that could save the Defense Department billions of dollars, though not
How does Arthur die? You know I'm talking about the new president. If he dies, Raymond Shaw becomes the new president, doesn't he? Chain of succession. That's what you got in mind. That's what you people want to do. You want to really run the world, don't you? Huh, Susie, Rosie, whatever the hell your name is. Well, I got my library card and I got your tapes. I do my research, too. We're going to the feds. We're going to the police, the newspapers, whatever it is.
I am the feds. Now get off me.
As she lies in her bed, Rosie pulls a gun and points it at Marco.
Get off of me.
He backs off as she scrambles out of bed wearing a vest and pajama bottoms. She trains her gun on him. He sits down.
We found an implant device. And now Melvin.
You found one of Melvin?
Just like you said. I'm part of a shadow unit. We've been watching you. Trying to sort this thing out.
This isn't an election. This is a coup. This is, in our own country, a regime change in our own country.
Ben, don't. Ben.
This is rich people, Manchurian Global, funding bad science to put a sleeper in the White House. And that's what's going on, Rosie. That's what's going on.
I want to believe you.
Well, then believe me. Help me. Help me. Shoot me. Help me or shoot me. Make a decision. Make a decision.
He clutches a photograph of Noyle. Her eyes brim with tears as she slowly lowers the gun.
I made a decision when I met you, Ben.
The tears roll down her cheeks.
Now why don't you show me what you have in your file?
Reporters flock around Shaw.
More profitable world through uncorruptible top-level management.
We trust you with our technology, and suddenly you turn him into a common hitman.
How fucking dare you? I trusted you with my son.
You didn't even ask us.
Don't lecture me! You swore to me that this was fail-safe. No leaks, no glitches, no dreams, no, not even a shadow of what was done.
You needed to ask before you acted.
Tom Jordan was going to destroy my son and everything I've worked for and every one of us along with it. And you wanted me to what? Call a meeting?
Look. In the larger course of history, there are key players and role players, Senator.
Bullshit! This is about my son and the future of this country.
I thought we understood each other.
I think we do. I think we really do. Your God is money.
And yours is?
No, I'm a believer. I am an optimist. I believe in the future. And people who do, the ones who make history instead of just sitting around watching it, no, they're willing to take the big risks. Yes, I made a decision. Oh, God, where are all the men anymore? My father, Tyler Prentice, never asked, is this okay? Is this okay? You know what I'm saying, Mark? He just did what needed to be done.
Come on, rise and shine, New York. It's a big day in the Big Apple. That's right. All polls indicate that New Yorkers will be turning out in record numbers today across the five boroughs to select a new president. At least that's how the rule books that spokesman out. Now, the polls open at 6 a.m., and bars and taverns in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, and Staten Island will be opening shortly thereafter. That's right, New Yorkers. We are free to drink and vote all day today, unlike New York.
Raymond Shaw waves to a crowd of well-wishers and to TV crews as he steps out of a limousine with security men and political aides. He's arrived at a school converted to a polling station. Inside, Rosie nods to an FBI colleague who then leaves her side. She whispers to Shaw's Secret Service man as he leads Shaw along a corridor of smiling supporters.
I hope so.
Let's have a win.
We're with you.
Thank you, Tony. Take care.
After he fills in his voting paper, his Secret Service man whispers to him.
Thank you.
He enters the polling booth and reaches for a note clipped to the wall. He unfolds the small piece of paper and reads it before going on to machine register his vote. Rosie, her FBI badge pinned to her chest, leads Shaw and party up the stairs. Immediately behind her, the Secret Service man glances right and left as they pace along a corridor. Rosie's FBI colleague steps through the door of a classroom and nods to her.
It's clean.
When the Secret Service man attempts to enter, Rosie blocks his way.
It's clean.
It's all right, Evan.
Shaw goes into the room alone. The FBI man closes the door. Inside, Marco is waiting. He turns on the light.
How's your back? I've been having the dreams, Ben.
Oh, that's good.
They're inside my head.
We'll get them out. I got the proof. I know what they did to us. I just don't know why.
I dream things, Ben. Terrible things that can't possibly have happened.
I'm gone, Ben. You're not, you're right here.
There's something I want you to have.
With tears in his eyes, he produces his Congressional Medal.
I don't deserve this.
Marco takes the medal and looks deeply moved.
Jocelyn's dead.
I know.
And the senator.
Yeah.
Did I
think so, Raymond, yes.
I don't remember, Ben. I don't remember.
Raymond, did they tell you what it is they want you to do? That's what I gotta find out. We gotta find out what's gonna happen, where it's gonna happen.
Are we friends, Ben? I wanna believe we were friends.
We are connected, and that's something nobody can take from us. You could have had me locked up, but you didn't. That's proof that there's something deep inside. There's a part that they can't get to, and it's deep inside of us. And that's where the truth is. That's our only hope. That's what you and me need to tap into, and that's what you and I are going to use to take them out, Raymond. We don't have much time, please.
I thought you were smarter than that.
Raymond, please.
You don't think they saw this coming, Ben? You don't think they factored you in? I am the enemy, Major Marco.
What are you talking about?
Yes, Mother. Yes, he's right here. She wants you.
Me? Yes, Senator.
Is this Captain Marco?
Yeah.
Captain Bennett Marco?
Yes.
Bennett Ezekiel Marco.
Yes.
Shaw smiles. An eerie white light engulfs the room.
Listen.
A As the school bell sounds, Marco's civilian guide in Kuwait walks along the corridor outside, passing Rosie and the other security personnel. Children arrive and stroll the corridor with their school bags strapped to their backs. The Secret Service man looms tall above the kids as he waits outside the door of the classroom Shaw went into. The door opens and Shaw emerges, looking calm and confident. From further along the passageway, Rosie stares at him. A young girl runs to a door beckoning a friend. The corridor clears, leaving only Rosie and two colleagues. Rosie steps into the classroom where Shaw and Marco met. The walls are lined with children's artwork, but Marco isn't there.
Major Marco?
From a circular table, Rosie picks up a piece of paper. She reads it and throws it down. She crosses to an inner door.
Ben?
She opens the door, and then another.
People should be allowed to say what is out of their mind.
She's emerged onto a stage in the school hall, where children in costume halt their performance, all looking at her in surprise. She steps from the stage into the audience.
The Bill of Rights gives people...
Shaw exits a building, smiling and waving.
Made ritual trips to the voting booth today. Governor Arthur casting his ballot in North Platte. Spent election night in the Big Apple with running mate Raymond Shaw for their anticipated victory party. The presidential rival, incumbent Vice President Nelson, returned to his home in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. He attended special church services this morning.
Shaw's Secret Service man walks along a narrow corridor of shiny bricks lit by fluorescent wall lights. The upper walls are lined with pipework. He carries a leather bag over his right shoulder. He reaches a steel door with the sign, "Authorized Personnel Only." It leads to a storeroom. Inside, he places the bag in a metal cubbyhole and screws the cover back on. He glances around. An array of multicolored flickering light seeps into the room, casting its reflection on him. He exits the room with a smug smile on his face. Back in the corridor, he sees another security man squatting to check a low cupboard.
All clear.
Raymond.
Clear.
Listen, the bullet will strike Bob Arthur the moment you step forward and arrive on your star beside him. Cause the assassin...
She gently bathes the wound on Shaw's back.
Deranged, obsessed, tragically paranoid lone gunman... is trying to kill you.
Major Marco's an excellent marksman.
But you must stay very, very still and stand right where you're supposed to stand.
What happens to Ben?
The assassin always dies, baby. It's necessary for the national healing.
He has a dreamy, absent look. She strokes his head.
I'm sure you will never entirely comprehend this, darling.
She looks into his blank eyes as he sits without his shirt.
But I want you to know, Raymond, I did this for you so that you could have what I couldn't, what your father threw away, the opportunity to lead this nation.
I know, Mother.
And so I let them take you. Change you a little bit, not so much that you would notice, but just enough to bring you back to who you really are and to what you will become.
His face breaks into a sickly smile.
Oh, and look at you. Look at you. Look what you've achieved. Look how far we've come. It's working, Raymond. You're going to save our country now, in the hour of her greatest need.
Yes, Mother.
But. But when you smile, oh, darling, when you smile, that's what I live for. Smile.
She kisses him on the lips and caresses his face. With a look of arousal, she moves to kiss him again.
Well, it's official. CBS News now projects Robert Arthur and Raymond Shaw to be the next president and vice president of the United States.
With at least 270 electoral votes and support of almost 70% of votes tallied tonight.
Arthur and running mate Raymond Shaw are leading in all but one remaining race in the sitting vice president's home state of Louisiana.
In the bustling FBI room, agents and uniformed police officers sit at desks with computer screens. Paperwork is passed round. Rosie leans over a monitor recording arrivals for the swearing-in ceremony of the new presidential team.
Whoa, wait, Jimmy, wait.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, no, go back. Can you go back?
Yeah.
The recording shows Marco in his army uniform holding his arms out to be searched.
Stop.
Sure.
Wait, now can you zoom in on that guy?
Yep.
No, Jimmy, the other one in the back, the shades. Yeah.
The operator zooms in on a man with dark glasses behind Marco.
Never mind. Thanks, Jimmy.
Marco, wearing an official name tag and displaying all his military medals, goes through a steel door into a small room. He steps towards a large grill in a wall from where an array of multicolored flickering light seeps in and reflects on his uniform. He stares through the grill bars towards a big stage below in the distance where the light is coming from. Marco looks through the grill bars at the chanting crowd below before turning to unscrew the cover of a metal cubbyhole to remove a leather bag. From the bag, he assembles a rifle with telescopic sights. He sits calmly in his shirt sleeves and places a single bullet in the chamber. Below in the stage wings, Shaw's secret service man stands vigilantly.
You did it!
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Right. Yes.
Hi.
The beaming presidential party walk through the hordes of supporters towards the stage in the huge hall. Massive screens on the walls are activated to show the glittering slogan, Secure Tomorrow.
Let's have a good show, people. Let's have a really good show, okay?
Rosie, wearing an earpiece and microphone, mingles with the supporters, her eyes darting in all directions.
Few screens.
On the screens, a three-dimensional picture of a rocket hurtling into space, then the American flag.
Music cue. Now music.
High above the jubilant crowd, Marco rubs his hands over his eyes. He reaches for the rifle and rests the barrel on a bar of the grill, pointing towards the stage. Closes his left eye and lowers his right eye to the rifle sight. Ceremonial smoke rises from the stage as the new President Arthur and Vice President Shaw warmly greet each other and walk to the front of the stage waving. Behind them, uniformed representatives of America's military services. Shaw, his face fixed in a smile, glances briefly up to the back of the hall in the distance, towards the hidey hole where he knows Marco will be watching. Marco is watching through the gun sight. He lines up the rifle sights on a paper star that discreetly marks a standing position on stage. Showers of confetti and balloons cascade down onto the stage. Other politicians and VIPs take to the stage. Senator Eleanor Shaw proudly stands beside her son. He kisses her cheek as she joins in the applause. President Arthur walks to the very front of the stage and stretches his arms out as a victory gesture. Marco has him in his gun sight. He cocks the weapon. The new president turns and beckons Shaw over to join him. As Shaw steps forward, the telescopic sight targets the president's head. Marco puts slight pressure on the trigger.
Damn it, Shaw missed his first position.
Marco removes his eye from the sight and looks over the rifle. From the stage, Shaw again stares up at where he knows Marco is poised. The Secret Service man looks from left to right. As the president's wife hugs her husband, Shaw stretches his arm towards his mother. She looks at him anxiously before stepping forward to join him. He embraces her. President is surrounded now by female well-wishers.
Just wishing you the bluest skies, hoping something better comes tomorrow, hoping all the verses rhyme and the very best of chorus.
Holding his mother's hand, Shaw again stares towards Marco. Rosie picks up the stare and follows Shaw's gaze. She looks wide-eyed as a dawn of realization sweeps over her. She speaks into her headset. Shaw grabs his bewildered mother and starts to dance with her, again looking towards Marco's gun position. He throws Marco a steely look, as if trying to convey a message. Marco stares back, as if trying to pick up a message. With his eyes fixed on the gun position, Shaw sways gently with his mother. He half smiles and gives a half nod. His mother follows her son's gaze, a look of anxiety clouding over her face. Marco has switched targets. The gun is now pointing to Shaw's back as he dances with his mother. He squeezes the trigger. The high-velocity bullet rips through Shaw and into his mother. Both collapse, blood spluttering from their wounds. Expressions of joy turn to horror as people slowly realize what has happened. Marco gazes at the stage mesmerized. Rosie dashes up the stairs, followed by another agent. Security men bungle the president off the stage. Other shocked bystanders are helped away. With a dazed expression on his face, Marco produces a handgun. Rosie sprints desperately to Marco's hideaway, gripping her gun.
Ben! Ben!
She shoots him in the shoulder just as he's about to shoot himself in the head. A colleague closes the door as she stares at Marco, sweat pouring from her face. Helpers hover uncertainly over the bodies of Shaw and his mother. There's an air of somber intensity in the FBI room. An officer works on a picture editing computer. Rosie holds a wall phone to her ear. After replacing the telephone handset, Rosie stands with senior FBI officers watching over the shoulder of the picture editor. He works with his sleeves rolled up, his agent's badge strung around his neck, concentrating on the monitor. He taps into a keyboard with his left hand while making notes on a pad with his right hand. A senior military officer in uniform watches the proceedings with a glum expression on his face. On the screen, a picture of Marco appears as he was being searched on arrival to the presidential celebrations. As the FBI man taps into the computer, another identity is transposed onto the picture of Marco. He becomes a man in a suit.
The FBI has just released security footage of the assassin of Raymond and Eleanor Prentice Shaw entering the hotel 2 hours before the fatal shooting. Authorities have identified the gunman as Klaus Bachmann. Bachmann was believed to have been killed in a car bomb explosion in Chechnya 4 years ago. He was employed there as a covert operations specialist by Global Endeavors, a UK subsidiary of the equity fund giant Manchurian Global. A second former Manchurian Global civilian contractor was taken into custody by federal agents at Chicago's O'Hare Airport early this morning. Lawrence Tokar made news during the Gulf War for his presence on Raymond Shaw's famed Lost Patrol. Tokar was missing in action after the ambush that resulted in Shaw being awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor. Authorities are exploring additional connections between the two men. Still reeling from the recent tragic loss of Senator Thomas Jordan, Congress has already announced a far-reaching investigation into Jordan's death in an effort to learn if it is in any way related to the Shaw assassinations. In a supercharged encounter moments ago, President-elect Arthur...
At the plush headquarters of Manchurian Global, the TV is silenced. Executives look from one to the other, dumbfounded. A man in a pinstripe suit crosses to the window and stares in despair at the city skyline. Now the view from a helicopter flying low over the sea. A beach of white sand comes into view. Another helicopter is parked on the ground close to stone ruins. Small groups of people mingle. Some are in military uniform and carry guns. Marco, his arm in a sling, walks through the ruins with Rosie.
I remember running. I had to get out. Where the sky was, and I had to get to the water. Escape, regroup, come back, get my men. I thought that if I could just get to the water, everything be okay. If I could just get to the water.
Rosie stands and watches as Marco slowly walks on alone towards the water, which comes in small waves to the shore. At the water's edge, Marco squats down and places a photograph of himself and the rest of his platoon in the sea. On the picture of Shaw, he rests the Congressional Medal. He stares thoughtfully at the photograph as the waves gently lap over it. His eyes are set far away in sadness. The nine members of his platoon are all smiling in the picture. They appear to be looking back at him through the shimmering water. His lips quiver. He's barely able to control the emotion he feels as he stands up straight, staring at the sea. He remembers it all now.
Now, when your rescued returned with your patrol to command headquarters, what will be among the first of your duties that you'll undertake?
I'll recommend Sergeant Shaw for the Medal of Honor, sir. He saved our lives. He terminated the enemy. Led us across the desert to safety.
Excellent. And there were casualties?
There's always casualties in war, sir.
The end.
Key to the land. And what the wild is nothing left for.